At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.
Spring is finally here, and it's that time of year when plans start becoming real. Trips are getting booked, the calendar is filling up, and the energy is shifting. Make this season count. By starting right now, you'll hit summer already feeling more confident speaking and understanding a brand new language. Whether you're prepping for a dream vacation, reconnecting with your family heritage, or just finally checking learn a new language off your bucket list, Rosetta Stone is the way to go. They've been the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years because they skip the boring stuff. There's no memorizing random vocabulary lists or leaning on chunky translations. Instead, their intuitive method helps you naturally absorb the language by connecting words and visuals to real-world meaning. It's about learning in context, the way language was actually meant to be learned. As a trusted expert with millions of users, Rosetta Stone offers 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more. It really is the ultimate tool for genuine growth. Ready to start learning a new language this spring? Visit rosettastone.com/RS10 today to explore Rosetta Stone and choose the language that's right for you. Go to rosettastone.com/RS10 now and begin your language learning journey.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we're pleased to be joined by Wes Haynes. He is Executive Director of the Merritt Parkway Conservancy. Good morning to you, sir.
Aaron, how are you?
I am well. First of all, tell us about the Merritt Parkway Conservancy.
Well, the Merritt Parkway Conservancy was formed in 2002 as part of a conservancy movement that that spread across the country. So, you know, you've heard of the Nature Conservancy, and their charge is conserving nature, a bigger charge than ours is. We're charged with preserving a 37.5-mile road that's listed on the National Register in Fairfield County. National Register of Historic Places, a very distinction, a great distinction for the road. And it's also designated a National Scenic Byway by the Federal Highway Administration. So it, for its scenic values, its aesthetics.
The Merritt Parkway is going to be celebrating its 80th anniversary in 2020.
Yes.
Tell us about its history.
Its history really starts around the turn of the century when the automobile, the internal combustion engine takes over from the horse-drawn carriages. And, you know, American society, or Western Europe, nobody knows how to deal with the problem or the new opportunities of cars as well. And by the 1920s, the proliferation of automobiles, especially in the New York metropolitan area, is pretty severe, that the existing roads that were developed for carriages cannot handle the volume. So in the early 20s, the movers and shakers in Fairfield County start saying, we need to designate a road for truck traffic that can get away from the cars that are all over the place and creating traffic jams, because we need to move you know, finished goods, where you have a huge industrial base down in Fairfield County. And so they start thinking about, well, let's do it parallel to US 1, about 6 miles to the north. And as they start to think about that a little bit more, the road morphs from a designated truck route into a designated automobile route to get the automobiles off of Route 1, improve Route 1 between New Haven and New York. And so this idea of this car-only highway is developed. It's really a kind of a novel concept. Now, there are parkways. There's a parkway system that's already started in development around 1906 in Westchester County, our adjoining county in New York State. And that has matured and blossomed to a certain extent that there are a number of parkways that are designated, restricted to cars to get them separated from the truck traffic. But the founders of the Merritt Parkway decide that the Connecticut Parkway is going to be a modern highway that can handle more improved vehicles than the condition of cars in 1906, which we were really dealing with very, very low-speed cars at that point. So they designed for a few years ahead for higher speeds and a more sophisticated way of moving cars through space. No, they didn't want any stop signs between the New York line and the end of the parkway where it was planned originally at the Housatonic River in Stratford. And so they develop interchanges that are based on modern European planning. During the Weimar Republic, the Autobahn comes in with limited access to the highway, and the parkway is designed completely with limited access, a really novel intervention at the time, innovation. And the other really interesting thing is that it's parallel in construction with the Pennsylvania Turnpike, which opens just a few months after the first leg of the Merritt opens. The Pennsylvania Turnpike is really designed as a modern highway, an autobahn that's straight as an arrow. It's actually laid out in an abandoned railroad bed that the railroad was never built, but the grades started to get changed. The Merritt, however, is not this kind of straight shot. The Merritt was designed over a completely brand new route that no human had ever traversed by foot before or any carriage had ever done. It really climbs a lot of the ridges that are down in lower Fairfield County and descends them. And it did that with modified cuts through the tops of the ridges to just level things out at the top, but without any tunnels, without, you know, just leveling the landscape and making it straight. And it really bent with the river courses that it needed to cross and made sense. It had a lot of existing context there because that area had been settled since the early 17th century by Europeans. So it was a really unusual road. It was part superhighway, but part parkway. And it was a one-of-a-kind, but it became the template for the federal parkway system that was introduced later through the Appalachian Mountains. And it also, the Taconic Parkway, postdates it and takes a lot of the ideas from the Merritt. So it opens to great fanfare in 1940. It's completed. It provides a ton of jobs, 2,000 jobs during the Depression for people that are unemployed. There's great affection of the workers that are building the parkway. We still hear from many of their descendants today, which is very, very heartwarming. And the parkway is a smash, but it opens just as gas rationing is taking hold in the United States for World War II. And so the volume isn't as heavy right away. And it eventually moves on to becoming a part of our commuter network. It stimulates a lot of real estate development throughout Fairfield County. Areas that had been former farmland are turned into subdivisions. And one of the myths about the parkway is that it was funded by the Federal Works Administration during the Depression, that it was a federal project. But actually, 71% of the parkway was paid for by Fairfield County government. We still had a county government system then. The county government floated bonds for the construction of it. The balance was paid mostly by the state highway department, and only 2% was federal money that went into the origin of it. So it's a very local road, and that's also a very unusual aspect of it. Connecticut has never planned a highway of that size again, using only state and certainly not as locavore as the Fairfield County funds were to pay for it.
When you talk about building a highway where no sort of footpath or smaller roadway existed before, I would think there might be at least a few detractors. Was this universally embraced by people in Fairfield County, or was there some opposition?
It was not universally embraced, and that's one of the reasons why the parkway looks like the parkway does today and has some of the restrictions on it does today. It took an enormous political effort to get all the local towns that it passed through to get on board with this, and they weren't all on board with it. Stamford and Bridgeport were the primary progenitors of it. They had the biggest industrial bases at the time. But the other more rural towns really didn't want the parkway to go through their areas. So it took our congressman, Schuyler Merritt, of who is the parkway is named for, to get all these, herd these cats into a room and get them all to sing to the same tune. And he had to promise them certain benefits. And the benefits were things like, you know, we will make it a beautiful highway. It's not going to look like Route 1. Another major force behind this was our state representative from Greenwich, Helen Binney Kitchell, a remarkable person in the history of conservation, forest conservation in Connecticut and as a whole. But she was a driving force in basically getting the a prohibition against billboards, which were, you know, just like the internet, the information superhighway came in, and it was, you know, there was a wonderful period where there was no advertising, and now it's just, you know, your screen is polluted by advertisements. Well, the same thing was happening with roads at that point in the development of the highway systems, that as soon as a road went in, they became constant stream of billboards, and she felt billboards were visually polluting. So there's no commercial vehicles allowed on the parkway because of the commercial signage that are on the vehicles, let alone there's no billboards allowed within the viewshed of the parkway as well. So those kind of benefits were thrown out there to get the local politicians to buy into this this new idea of a parkway going through their backyards.
One of the more aesthetically pleasing components of the parkway are the bridges. They are certainly nicer looking than, say, bridges along I-95 or I-91. What can you tell us about the bridges? And I guess there's a myth that's been out there too, right?
There's a myth that I encounter whenever I start to talk to a group of people about the bridges. Somebody says, you know, I heard that the bridges were all designed by Yale architecture students as a studio project, or I heard that they were all designed at some wild late night party. Architectural students do these things called charrettes, where they stay up all night and they kind of steal each other's designs and share them. And it was done at a Yale architecture school charrette. And it's a wonderful legend, but it is a myth. And they were all designed by a very interesting architect. He was a Hartford architect who had a small practice just as the Depression hit. So he went for a job at the State Highway Department, and he was appointed the architect of the bridges for the parkway. His name was George Dunkelberger, and he spent pretty much 6 years, from 1934 to 1940, designing the bridges. For each place where the bridges cross the highway or the parkway crosses over the local street grids and rivers in some cases, he presented to the Merritt Parkway Commission, which was the agency that was sort of supervising and making sure that it met Fairfield County's requirements, that they were staying on tune with what Schuyler Merritt had promised everyone. He put together two designs. So there were originally 72 bridges. Approximately 140 bridges were designed for the parkway, and all of them are different. No two are identical. He drew on a lot of the current styles in architecture and actually industrial design. I mean, some of the bridges look more like toasters from the 1930s than they do like buildings. But Art Deco, Renaissance Revival, we call it Art Moderne now, but it was Art Deco and Art Moderne were really modern design at the time. And they're quite beautiful bridges.
You're listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Wes Haynes, Executive Director of the Merritt Parkway Conservancy. How difficult has it been to maintain some of the unique features of the parkway over the years, as you know, people wanted to go faster and there were more concerns about highway safety standards, things like that?
That was a major period of the parkway's history when, after I-95 came in as a modern highway, without it wasn't so much a local, there wasn't as much local participation in the layout and the planning of I-95. It was pretty much the federal government telling Fairfield County that they needed a road for federal defense and it's just going to come in through the middle of your cities. And, you know, we're not going to do this at the level that you did the parkway. And after that happened, there was a period where people were saying, well, we need to, you know, make the parkway look more like I-95. And after the floods, for example, of in the 1950s, when there was all this drainage control put in upriver, some of the bridges washed out on the parkway across the rivers, and they were replaced with bridges that look more like I-95. You don't see them from the parkway, but you go over them. And then the administration of the parkway, you know, got farther and farther away from Fairfield County. And there were the speeds were increasing. The parkway originally accommodated 45 miles an hour as sort of the top speed. Our recent studies have indicated that people, 85% of drivers are driving in excess of 75 miles an hour. So the parkway, you know, the nature of driving the parkway changed. The volume increased enormously. Some 25 million vehicles are on the parkway in a year, and that's a conservative estimate on our point from our perspective. So there was just a lot of pressure to change the parkway in the 1960s and 70s from the kind of pastoral bucolic ride through a garden spot. And that led to a lot of conflicts with between DOT and the local residents of Fairfield County. There was a group called Save the Merritt formed when the Route 8 and Route 25 interchanges were proposed. They actually got built, but the group Save the Merritt, which was a grassroots preservation movement, did knock back the design from something that was going to look more like the Mixmaster in Waterbury than what they eventually got built. And when our group was formed, even though we were formed as part of this conservancy movement that was to work in partnership with the public agencies that run things and that run the resource in a non-confrontational way, unfortunately, our first act was to go to court with DOT, against DOT, about the Route 7 interchange, which was being planned as a massive connection. The Route 7, there was a connector put up between I-95 and the parkway, and it was intended to be a superhighway put all the way up to Danbury. The interchange, the big interchange, was going to be at the parkway. We said this is not appropriate for the parkway. By then, the parkway was listed on the National Register of Historic Places, and certain federal funds that would be needed to build that were controlled by that listing. And we won in court. The judge ruled in our favor, and we're still working that out. I'm happy to report that it looks like DOT has come up with a solution that's moving in the direction that we'd like them to take it. It's about half the size of the interchange that was proposed back in 2002.
What are some of the other issues affecting the parkway today? I'm guessing tree trimming might be near the top of the list.
Tree trimming is and vegetation management. I mean, tree trimming is part of managing vegetation. And that was something that, you know, Kurt Vonnegut once said that everybody loves to build things and nobody likes to maintain them. The parkway was meticulously planned by, with a lot of civic engagement, putting in dogwoods and mountain laurels, and it had a very wise and very talented landscape architect who kind of cited a lot of the tree plantings. And there was an intent for the first 10 years of it to manage that landscape at a very high level. But as we all know today, the interstate highway system is expanded and highway maintenance, just managing vegetation along the highway corridors, has become something that nobody really likes to do. And unfortunately, that's been one of the existential issues of the parkway, is just taking out the dead trees that have, you know, climaxed and they're on their way out, but figuring out how to introduce succession planting. We've also dealing with climate change and a lot of invasives that are strangling out trees that shouldn't be, that haven't reached their peak yet. And then also the other aspect is resiliency after a storm that's caused by climate change. Sandy just, you know, really devastated a lot of the parkway corridor, the vegetation on the parkway, and to get out some of the trees that were damaged and threatening to traffic, a lot of damage was done to the shoulders, the other plantings on the shoulders at the time. So we're still trying to wrap our heads around managing the vegetation better and getting it back to a sense that it screens out a lot of the development that wasn't there when the parkway was built, but also opens up the kind of view sheds that the landscape architects wanted. Connecticut has one of the most lovely topographies in the United States, and we want to, you know, celebrate that with the parkway, and that's what the parkway is all about.
There was a time when there were tolls on the parkway. Does the Conservancy have a stance on whether or not tolls should be returned?
Our board has not taken a position one way or the other. We get the resistance to paying more taxes through tolls, but we also really feel firsthand the need for revenues to maintain the highways. I mean, we review the right now there's $150 million worth of rehab work going on the Parkway corridor itself. That we review those projects at an intimate detail. We know the cost of things. It does cost a lot to maintain any highway in the state, but the merit, you know, really does have this special aesthetic qualities. So we get the need, and we also get the resistance. We don't have an opinion on the tolls itself, but we will fight tooth and nail to keep gantries off the parkway. There are alternate ways of collecting tolls, of tagging vehicles electronically, without overhead gantries. That just happens to be the state of the art technology from the 1980s. There are much more less visually intrusive ways of collecting tolls from vehicles. So that's where our focus is on that, not supporting or fighting tolls itself.
When you go around the state and talk to people about the merit, what is the number one question you get?
Why do they have to mow so much? Why do I always have to wait in traffic for someone to mow? The parkway wasn't designed very well for grass shoulders. That's, you know, that's just a factor. There's not a lot of when someone's coming on a mower close to the edge of the road, there's not a lot of space between you and the vehicle. So DOT likes to provide a safety buffer there. We are looking at slower grow, maybe one slower growth ground covers, maybe vegetation that only needs to be cut back once a year instead of twice. They really only mow the shoulder twice a season, but still, it's very, very disruptive. And maybe there'll be a ground cover that we can discover that will be even less maintenance intensive closer to the shoulder. We're also trying to keep deer away from the edges of the road, too. So that's another factor that we're looking at. So it has to be something that deer don't like, that grows so slowly and still looks good on the side of the parkway. We have several experimental stations going on in conjunction with DOT around the state.
As we talked about earlier, the merit is celebrating 80 years in 2020. Do you have any plans to mark that anniversary?
Well, we don't have a big event planned at this point. We may have a reception for our supporters that would bring those folks in, because we are supported exclusively by public or by private donations. We have no public funds that that keep us going. But what we're looking at is some policy directives. The really positive impacts of the Parkway have been guided by a number of guidelines that the design guidelines that were developed in the 1990s for exclusively for the Merritt Parkway. And in fact, the guide rail that's used widely throughout the Parkway has been adapted by the National Park Service. It's used in other states, and it's called the Merritt Parkway Guide Rail. So we'll go down in the history of transportation too, even for the contribution we made in the 1990s. But we need to kick up the guidelines a notch to deal with vegetation management, which is a very important aspect. And then just bridge maintenance, too. The bridges are being meticulously restored. We're doing conservation studies where we send a conservator out to take field tests of samples from the mortars and the paint chips from the bridges, matching them under the microscopes, and then developing specs that are really bring those bridges back to what they originally were intended to look like. A lot of them have been coated. A lot of them have been, you know, altered with the railings and small details. So we're trying to get recapture some of that back. We're also looking at the possibility of lighting the bridges, architectural lighting on the bridges, not for illuminating the corridor, but just to bring those bridges into relief at night so you can enjoy them then.
He is Wes Haynes, Executive Director of the Merritt Parkway Conservancy. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Aaron. This has been a delight.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.